This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It is August 30th, 2017. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week with my co-host, Fran Storch.
Yo!
And this is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, please text or call 860-486-9487 while we're on the air, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com or visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you would like to contribute or to be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Okay, I'm going to start the show off this week with the On the Positive Side. And the On the Positive Side is, it's back to school time. So what is that? Why does that fit into the whole bicycle scheme of things? Because here we are sitting on a large college campus, and there are a number of people that have bicycles to find their way around the large campus. And this campus is fairly spread out, as many of them are. So to get from one end of campus to the other end of campus and do it walking is going to take you some time to do. But boy, when you get on your bike, you can be there in no time. So you see a lot of people riding their bikes around. Plus, we get a large influx of international students. And international students are more prone to ride their bicycles than local students are because it's more their way in their countries. So it's a familiar thing for them. So on a positive time, on a positive side, it's back to school time. Let's all appreciate the fact that we can travel all over campus on our bicycles and everywhere else. And some tips, just so you know, there are many cities and many places that do not allow bicycles on sidewalks. So I'm going to mention this. There are some that tolerate it. And I believe Mansfield is one of the tolerating towns that tolerates bicycles on sidewalks. Most communities do not allow it. It is against the law. Sidewalks are for pedestrians, not for bicycles. So, should you ride your bicycle on the sidewalk because you're in fear of the road, because the road can sometimes be busy? Boy, wouldn't it be great if UConn would just shut down all the all the motorized vehicle traffic to the central campus? That would really be a neat thing. A little shout out there to UConn on that. I know it was a plan many years ago. I'd love to see it implemented. It would be so cool to see. But anyway, in this case, it is not. So we see a lot of people on bicycles. And often I will see people on bicycles riding way too fast. Remember, if you're going to ride a bicycle on a sidewalk, you ride at pedestrian speed. Please, pedestrian speed. Okay, which means that you could be walking, not riding, when you're on the sidewalk, which kind of makes sense. Therefore, means that if you want to get someplace faster, use the road, please. So, anyway, moving on from that, we're going to go to Bicycling Magazine had an article out recently, the best bikes for college students, because, you know, it's that time of year. And often, many of them will be single-speed bicycles just because of the ease of not having to deal with derailleurs. Even in some cases, for those who are extremely talented, brakes, because they'll use what they call a fixie bike, which has a fixed gear which you can pedal in either direction, and you can actually control your speed by the amount of pressure you put on the pedals. But the bike is truly the ticket for freedom and fun and a great way to get around. And it's very efficient. It's real easy to use. So, you know, it's a neat thing. You can put a rack on the back of it. You can carry bags on it. You can go shopping with it. You can use it for so many things. And when you're in a compact area like let's say, Storrs, Connecticut, right here at UConn, you can use your bike to get around. You don't really need a car up here. So that's a bonus. So get a bike, use your bike, have fun on your bike. We have a local bike shop reasonably close by. Check it out. I'm going to move on to Ron's rant of the week because we must have a rant. It's very important that we have a rant. My rant of the week kind of coincides with the whole back to school thing. And that is that my rant of the week is bicycle thieves. Don't like them. Don't like them at all. Bicycle thieves. Back in the days of horses and horses and people that were riding them for transportation and also using them on their ranches to do their thing because there was no machinery. If you were a horse thief, they would hang you. It was bad.
Wow.
I mean, it was serious. Now, I'm not, you know, saying that we should do that to bicycle thieves, but, you know,
we should prosecute them.
Get your own bike. You know, I mean, really, if you're that desperate for a bicycle, then do it. Of course, the problem with bicycle thieves is they're not interested in your bicycle. They're interested in selling your bicycle and therefore making money so that they can buy the things that they want.
Well, I'm also wondering if some people who steal bicycles are buying them to use them because they need a bicycle and they can't afford one.
You know what? If they're stealing a bicycle to use it, then they can have it. I'm okay with that. I'm really okay with that because if you really need it that bad, then okay.
What if the other person needed it really bad?
Well, that's true. That's a good point. But there are, you know, there are systems in place, too. There are places like I was at BCCO in Hartford yesterday.
Don't steal a bicycle. There's ways to get a bicycle, even if you don't have a lot of money or you have no money.
Bingo. There's the answer right there. And the other thing is that, tag sales, $10. I see it all the time. I mean, they're functional. They're not great, but you can always pick something up that will, give you the base transportation you need. You don't need to buy a bike that's going to win the Tour de France in order to ride your bike around campus. You need something very, very simple. So another thing that if you're looking for best bikes for college students, if you live in this area, we have a few more hills. So maybe the Fixie isn't exactly the bike for you. So you might want to consider, something that is multi-speed so you can handle some of the hills. Backing up to Ron's rant of the week, bicycle thieves. Bike thieving family arrested after 3-month spree. This made it into a few of my different publications here, Bicycling Magazine and also Bicycle Retail and Industry News. Four brothers allegedly took to the California and Nevada mountains to steal high-end mountain bikes. They were stealing these really expensive, full suspension, totally, tricked out mountain bicycles. And apparently they did this for months, and it was four brothers, and they were having a heyday out there. So they were picking out, some really nice, high-end Yeti bicycles and Santa Cruz bicycles, really, really nice stuff. And, of course, they were selling them, and they weren't selling them because they wanted, to buy another bicycle. They were selling them because they were probably using drugs or whatever, and they needed to supply themselves with some sort of an income for that. But terrible thing. It's really sad. So we're going to go moving on to, I'm going to segue off of this because I think that this is something we need to pay attention to. Things like how to lock your bike up. So you're here, you're on campus, you have your bicycle that you brought from home. You kind of like it. You'd kind of like to keep it. You kind of don't want to see it go away. So there's some tricks in here. There's an article here from The Guardian, which is a British publication, and it's Bike Thief Tells How to Stop Your Cycle from Being Stolen. Okay, so this is a fictional name, Omar Aziz, and he was hooked on crack for 13 years. He stole bicycles to feed his habit. He explains how to protect your bike from thieves. So he goes down to the different things he looked for. He looked for the cheap lock, okay? That's a classic. You look for the cheap lock. What's a cheap lock? Well, a cheap lock is something that has a very, very thin chain, something that maybe a very thin cable, too, because, any good bike thief who knows his way around has got a nice set of bolt cutters, and they can cut through a lot of things. So you wanna make sure that if you're going to lock your bike up, if you really treasure that bike and you want to do it right, this particular character now locks his own bike up with two thick chains, both through both wheels and the frame. Thieves can get through thick chains with the right equipment, but it takes a lot of time and heavy cutting equipment. And that's the thing. If if you're out going after bikes at that high a degree, you're going to have a set of bolt cutters that are at least 3 feet long. And that's pretty noticeable if you're, looking around and you see somebody walking with a giant set of bolt cutters, you might want to identify them or make a quick phone call and say, hey, there's a person walking around with a giant set of bolt cutters, and report them, because that's probably what they're after. So, anyway, you want to be careful about that sort of thing. So pick a cable or a lock or a chain that has a degree of thickness, and it's very heavy duty, that will keep you from having it taken very easily, because the thief is not going to have as much of a good time with that. If you this is a classic I've seen before. People use what they call a ski lock. I don't know if you've ever seen these, but they're these very thin, like pencil thin cables that have a combination on them, and then they use that to lock their bike up. And you can get through that with a pair of diagonal pliers. So, you know, it's really think about this. You want to get yourself a good one. The classic great locks out there are the big U-locks, and they are, there was a company called Kryptonite, there still is a company called Kryptonite that has made these for years. I think Master is another company that makes these, but they're really, really hard. They're hardened steel, they're a big U-lock. By the way, they do not work if you don't lock the front wheel next to the rear wheel and around the frame. And they also do not work if you don't lock them around a stationary object. Because if you just lock the bike up and lay it down somewhere or lean it against something and it's not locked against anything secure, the thief will just pick it up and walk away with it. And then they'll work on it later when they have time. So, you know, you want to be smart about it too. Here's another classic mistake. And I'm just looking down the list of all the different things that this guy looked for. And the other classic mistake, and this is one that, so I have a nice bike and I decide that it's nice enough, so I just don't want everybody to see it, because if somebody sees it, they may go, ooh, that's a nice bike, I want to steal that one. So you go into a building at UConn where you're not supposed to bring your bike inside. You're supposed to use the racks outside, but you do. You go inside this building, and you lock it behind a stairwell, and you lock it up real good, and you put it, you know, nice and secure, and you use your cable, and you got it all locked up. It's kind of hidden. Nobody really knows it's there. Bad idea, folks. Real, real bad idea. Why? Because so that no one can see it, so can no one see the bike thief, who has now lots of time and privacy to get your bike out of there. So don't do that. You'd be better off to actually lock your bike next to all the other bikes that are out there, because the chances of someone else who owns a bike seeing someone trying to steal your bike are far greater in a high traffic area than they are in a low traffic area. So you want to do that. So anyway, watch that. This particular person also chose to steal more expensive bikes just to ride them as far as a sale point, and then he would just sell them very quickly and then move on and then find another bike. So, you know, it's just, you really have to understand that you've got to be smart about how you lock your bike up. Be careful about it. These big, heavy racks that they have around campus, I'm not particularly fond of them. They're big pipes, really, that are, coming out of the ground. But if you do lock a bike carefully against that, you will be very, very secure. You're really not going to have much of a problem with that. So just be careful where you lock your bike and how you lock your bike, because it makes a big, big difference. Bicycling Magazine has 7 surprising ways to keep your bike from getting stolen. They have, I'm going down the list here. Park in a highly visible place. Hey, didn't I just say that? Avoid locking up in front of movie theaters, museums, schools, train stations, and other places that might require a lengthy visit. There you go. So if you lock your bike up at a place where, let's say, you're going to go in and watch a movie for 2 hours, All you have to do is look at the movie schedule, and you know how much time you have to steal that bike. So you kind of aim for a spot in front of a coffee shop or a restaurant filled with customers sitting behind the windows looking out onto the street. Good place. Find a secure anchor. And it should be go without saying. I had talked about this, too. You want to anchor it onto something that is stationary that you cannot, you know, you can't lift the bike up and off of. A classic, this is always a fun one, in the cities for many years, people would lock their bicycles onto a parking meter. Well, that's just a brilliant thing, and it certainly is a very stationary object. But if you just pick the bike up and lift it up and over the parking meter, you got yourself a free bike. So that really doesn't work. A chain link fence is a better idea because you're going to have to weave through the chain link fence and you just can't lift it up and out. So think about that too. It says here in the Bicycling Magazine one to avoid crowded bike racks, which I'm a little surprised to see. I would say that, you know, that would be a better place to be secure just because of the amount of traffic it gets so far in that particular situation, you know, you'd have a lot more people watching over your bike. But this says jam-packed racks are not just stages for lots of tangling and scratching to a thief, but they also provide good cover. It's far riskier to steal a lone bike than it is pinching one from the bunch. Well, I'm going to add on to that. If it is a lone bike, make sure it's still in a highly visible area. That would be my addition to that. Rotate parking spots. If you lock up in the same place all the time, changing locations prevent nefarious observers from catching on to your routine. Better yet, become a regular at a local business and ask the workers there to keep a casual eye on your bike whenever it's locked up front. I have also found that there are some, I ride a fairly expensive bicycle, and I often do not carry a lock with me because I'm just going to run in someplace very quickly and run back out, maybe to grab a drink or whatever. I have found that if it's a place where I am suspicious that it would not be a great place for me to leave my bike outside, I just ask them, can I just bring my bike in? My bike's worth a lot of money. I really don't want to lose it. And, you know, I'm going to buy a couple things from you and then I'm going to leave. I won't be in your way for long. And a lot of merchants are very happy to allow you to do that sort of thing. So you can always do that too. Be clever about attaching the lock. So this person's go-to configuration is to hook a U-lock around the rear wheel only right where it passes through the frame's rear triangle. In this configuration, both the frame and wheel can't go anywhere. Conveniently, the lock keeps the wheel from rolling, which prevents the bike from sliding down the pole and tipping over. Plus, the anchor is tall enough. The edge of the saddle leans against the pole instead of your frame. You can further increase the stability of orienting the bike downhill so that the front wheel doesn't flop sideways. Now, I'm gonna put an addition onto this one, too. Years ago, I was calling on a bicycle shop in New Haven where bicycle theft is very high, being that it is a big city, and being it is the home of Yale University, where lots of people bring their bikes in to use them for riding around campus or going for a ride or whatever. And the owner of the bicycle shop, I would always go see him in late July, and I'd ask him, do you need any more seat posts, seats, or front wheels? And he'd go, yeah, what do you got? And because I was I'm a salesman in the bike industry. And I would give him a price, and he'd go, yeah, okay, that's a pretty good price. I think I could do that. And he would say, okay, I'll take like 50 of those front wheels that you have right there. And I'd say, okay. And he goes, and the same, you know, let me give it a variety of seat post sizes. I take 10 of these and 5 of those. And he would mix it all up, and then he would buy some saddles from me too. And I questioned him when he first did this, the first year he did this. I said, why are you doing this? What's this all about? He said, it's for the Yaleys. He said, they come here for an education. And he said, the people on the street, give it to them. And what they do is they steal the seats and seat posts out of the bikes, and they steal the front wheels off the bikes. If the bike is locked, no big deal. They just steal those pieces. So if you're using that lovely U-lock and you've done such a good job of locking it up and you haven't secured that front wheel, they're going to take your front wheel because there's some value in it, and they'll do something with it. You know, maybe it's got a brand new tire on it. Maybe they'll just junk the rest of it because they'll just use the tire and the tube. But they're gonna steal that front wheel. So you gotta, if you're using a U-lock and you have a quick release front wheel, you really need to take the front wheel off, put it back there with the rear wheel and the frame and the U-lock, combine it all together and lock it securely. So very, very important. Consider the message your parking job sends. And this person says they only use one lock, a mid-weight U-lock. They don't bother with a second cable or something to secure the wheels. They believe using multiple locks only signals that you won't return for a while. Instead, this person uses an aftermarket skewers that require a special wrench to remove. Okay, quick release skewers. They generally are quick release because they have a cammed lever that you flip out and then you can take your wheel off. Now, there are companies that make skewers that are activated by Allen wrenches instead. So you would need an Allen wrench in order to release the wheel. Now, it no longer makes it quick release, but it does make it far more secure. So that is another way that you can deal with that situation. And here is the thing that I don't highly recommend, but I have seen done, and I have actually done it myself. If I am in that position where I have my nice bike with my quick release wheels on it, and I need to just leave it for a few minutes while I go into a store or someplace, and I am really concerned about it, yeah, I flip the quick releases off. So basically the wheels are not secured to the frame at that point. And this is not a wise decision, but it's something you do in a desperate moment. So if you feel like you need to have some sense of security, then you just release the wheels completely so that if a thief hops on the bike, first of all, the rear wheel will jam into the frame so they won't be able to go anywhere because the wheel is not on secure. And the front wheel could possibly fall off, which is going to cause some damage to the bike, but you're still going to have the bike. And the thief will be in a pile on the ground. So there are ways of dealing with not having a lock with you at that time. So these are things you can do to hopefully keep yourself secure and away from these bike thieves, because, you know, it's a problem. People will steal bikes. And you've got to be careful about that sort of thing. And this is that time of year. So the backing up to the bike shop by Yale University, I went into his store one day, and after he had purchased a lot of these things from me, and I said, "So did you get all those wheels? Did you get all those, you know, everything I sold you?" He said, "Yeah, follow me downstairs." And I went downstairs, and he had what he bought from me and from others. He probably had over 100 front wheels with tires on them hanging there, ready to go, ready to be put onto the bike from the person who had their bike stolen or the front wheel stolen. And he had all these saddles lined up on the floor, just laid out on the floor, and he had little tags next to each one of them which indicated the seat post size, so that he could very quickly go downstairs and grab a saddle and also grab a front wheel and bring them up and sell them to the kids that had lost their parts off of their bicycles. And at that same time, he would sell them a very large U-lock, and the education was complete. So you get a little financial education, and you get another education too. So anyway, the point being here is that you need to watch everything when you lock your bike up. There is always going to be someone out there who is going to find it possible to grab your bicycle and do something with it. So, you know, you want to secure your bike. Just, you know, your bike is important. It's a piece of you. It really is. It's an extension of you, and it's your transportation, and that's the way it is. So you want to make sure that you've got it well secured. And so anyway, that's another thing that you need to do when you come back to college is pay attention to the bike thieves, because they're probably out there. There's always someone. Moving forward here, we have, it is the Vuelta a España. So we are still into the Tour of Spain. It's going on. We've had, what, 10 stages now, I believe. Today is stage 11. And ho-hum, get ready, put on your ho-hums. Guess who's winning the Vuelta a España, Fran?
I don't know, Froome?
Yeah, Froome. Team Sky.
What's he doing winning? He just won the Tour de France.
Yeah, okay. There you go.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is impressive. And not only is he winning it, but the second place person, who is Johan Esteban Chavez Rubio from Colombia, who rides for Orica Scott, he's 36 seconds behind him. So he's close. He's very, very close, and there is a good chance. But the next person behind, there are two guys behind him, and that's Nicolas Roche and Vincenzo Nibali, both very good riders. And they're a minute and 17 behind him already at stage 10. And TJ Vandegarden from the U.S., BMC Racing Team, he's in a minute and 27 behind. Everyone really in the top 10 is basically 2 minutes or less behind. And there are definitely some big characters there. Fabio Aru from the Astana team in Italy, the Italian pro champion. He is a minute and 33 seconds behind, so he's pretty close by. Adam Yates from Great Britain, Orica Scott is a minute and 55 behind. So, you know, they're all close, but, you know, why are you guys letting Team Sky run you around like this? I mean, I know Team Sky is a well-oiled machine. They really are. There's no question about it. But I'm bored. I need a change. I need somebody to do something about this. I'm starting to get a Lance Armstrong disease here. I'm starting to feel a little concerned about the, it's just, why do I want to watch it if it's just Froome going to win again, you know? I mean, good Chris Froome, you know, awesome rider. Got to give him credit. He looks horrible on his bike, but boy, he can move a bike way faster than I'll ever dream of moving a bike. But I'm bored.
Well, especially now.
Yeah, especially now.
Are you bored with the Husky women's basketball team?
Not at all.
What's up with that?
Yeah, what is up with that?
Yeah.
What is up with that? Yeah.
I'm not bored with the Husky women's basketball team.
Okay, I guess if you have a favorite team and you like them and you want to watch them continue to win, it's okay. It's okay. But I just, you know, I mean, bike racing, I've grown up with bicycle racing, and there's always been somebody different each year because there's always somebody coming out of here or coming out of there. This pre-described, this is what we're going to do. This is the machine we're going to create and how we're going to do it. It's just getting old, that's all. I want to see somebody like Fabio Aru, who has no team, all of a sudden just come out and just pound the daylights out of these guys because he can.
What about Nairo Quintana?
Or Nairo Quintana. He's not even in this one.
Oh.
I don't think he is. I don't see him on the list. I only have the top 10 list here, so I can't really tell you. But Nairo won this last year. You know,
he won the Vuelta last year. Oh, that's great.
But, you know, I think Nairo tried to go, he tried to do the Giro and then the Tour de France. And I think Nairo is a little cooked at the moment. And I don't blame him. You know, I mean, take some time off, man. It's really hard. This is so demanding on these guys. I can't imagine him doing another one. And they've got, you know, they have other riders out there that can do well. And there's other Colombians too that are up and comers that are out there. So, you know, we'll just have to see what happens here. But you would think that there would be more Spanish riders up on the top, but right now we've got Great Britain, Colombia, Ireland, Italy, the USA. Sixth place right now is from Spain. Seventh place is from Italy. Eighth place is from Canada. Ninth place is from Great Britain, and 10th place is from Russia. So there's only one Spaniard in the top 10 in the Vuelta a España. We got some more mountains. We got a lot of mountains going on here. 2017 edition is packed with summit finishes, including the legendary Angulo Giro. So we're going to see that. There's some stuff coming up here. Today's stage 11 is 187 kilometers. They did have a rest day in here 2 days ago, But 187 kilometers, it has three Category 2 climbs, one Category 3 climb. Actually, make that three Category 3 climbs, I think, according to this. Oh, yeah, that last little, there's a wall at the end of this one at 175 kilometers. So, you know, we'll see what happens today. We'll just kind of wait and see what's going to happen. But I'm looking for some more excitement here. I'm not feeling it right now. So it's, you know, it's what it is. Just, it's bike racing. I love bike racing. I love watching it. And I just want somebody else besides the, you know, the Froome show out there. It sure would be a lot nicer if there was. But it's what it is. So that's what we're dealing with. Other things in the news. We are approaching, and we will be talking about very soon, cyclocross. We have a lot of stuff coming up in cyclocross. For any of you who have not been aware of what, who are not aware of what cyclocross is, and if you're listening to this, you probably are aware of it because you're a bike person. But it is a combination of off-road cycling with and maybe a few steps of running and some jumping over items and picking up and carrying your bicycle. And it was designed originally many years ago as a winter sport, and it was designed to keep riders in good condition so they could keep their fitness over the winter or improve on their fitness, because it is a big, I will say, strength exercise. So it's going to build your strength endurance. The races are short, but there's a lot of brute strength that goes into them to make them happen. So it's kind of a cool thing. And it's something that I ran into years ago, because I was brought into cycling by a couple of crazed, nerdy cycling guys that shout out to Russ and Scott. And they brought me into this thing and said, well, you should do this, you should do that. They kept trying to break me. I don't know exactly what they were trying to do. But it was fun, and it was a way that we could just go out and play. And, of course, I took to it fairly quickly because I grew up on a farm. And what did we do? We rode our bikes in the woods. I rode on cow paths in the farm. That's what we used to do when we were kids. So riding my bike in the woods was kind of a fun thing. So anyway, cyclocross is a form of bike racing, and the races typically take place in the autumn and winter. And they consist of many, many laps of a short 2.5 to 3.5 kilometer or 1.5 to 2 mile course, featuring pavement, wooded trails, grass, steep hills, obstacles requiring the rider to quickly dismount and carry the bike while navigating the obstruction and then remount. And so anyway, the races are generally, they say on this description here, has it at 30 minutes to an hour long. Basically, 40 minutes, 45 minutes is a common cross race. If it is a high-level Category 2, 1, 2, 3 pro race, you're going to see up to an hour. Both men and women do this. It's a skill race. It really is. There's a lot of disciplines here. So why do I want to ride a cyclocross bike? Why do I want to race cyclocross? Because it will improve, and this is hands down, everyone who has come to me and said, you know, Ron, I'm thinking of trying to do cross, but, you know, I'm a little worried about it. I don't know much about it. Can you help me with this? So I give a lot of clinics. I take people out. I show them how to mount and dismount their bike at speed. I show them how to ride on off camber areas which are difficult to ride on because your bike kind of wants to slip and slide down. And I show them how to ride through mud, how to ride through deep sand. There are little tricks and little rules to it. And they don't always work because you never know what you're going to run into with cross. That's part of it. But why do I like it so much? Because you become a much, much better road rider when you ride cross. And you don't have to race cross. You don't have to be out there, you know, putting it out at top level. Just ride cross, ride on your cross bike. Ride your cross bike not just on the rail trail, which is a gravel road, or your gravel grinder, which is the new defined off-road bicycle that people are now riding on, which is slightly different than a cross bike, but really it's a modified cross bike. Ride it somewhere where it's not really defined as well. Ride it off-road. Ride it in through fields. Ride it on off-camber surfaces. My favorite place, I was talking to someone yesterday, and they're saying, you know, I really want to get into this more, but I just don't know where to train. You know, there's no, like, course out there they can train on. I said, so go to a power line. Go where the motorcycles go. If there's, if you're in any area where there are dirt motorcycles, you know, off-road motorcycles that are out there, you know, beating paths through the woods, or they have an open field that they've turned into a neat little place to ride their bikes around, great place to ride your cross bike, because they're going to lay out a bunch of terrain for you that is going to be hard for you to handle. And you're going to get a lot of loose sand, you're going to get off cambers, you're going to get all sorts of really cool, interesting stuff. So when I first started racing cross, I actually would ride power lines. That was my thing. I had a power line that was about a 5-minute ride from my house to get to, and I would immediately, and when I got to the power line, it was a wall, so I had to dismount my bike right away, throw it up on my shoulder, and run up the very steep section until I could get to the point where it was rideable, and I would ride. And you just, you know, everything comes at you very quickly when you're riding off-road. Things are always changing. Nothing is consistent. This is all the reason why I love to get people on cross bikes and why it makes you a better road rider. And people go, well, I don't care. I'm always riding on smooth roads. I don't need to know any of this. Well, you do need to know this, because what if you're out there riding on this beautiful smooth road and you come, you know, barreling around a corner really fast and there's a pile of sand in the road? What is going to be your reaction? What is going to be the result? Many people, the reaction is they slam on the brakes because they see the sand in the road, the gravel in the road, and they go, oh my God, and they slam on the brakes and come to a really quick stop. If they have riders behind them, they cause a big problem for everyone. Now, what is the right thing to do? So you look at that, you evaluate it. If you can correct your turn and you're laid over on the turn, and you can upright the bike and ride straight through it and then continue the turn, you're going to ride right through it without any problem. And how are you going to learn about that? You're going to learn about that by riding your cyclocross bike. Because the thing you learn very quickly on a cross bike, and when you ride off-road, and shout out to those who ride mountain bicycles too, because it's the same gig, but when you do this, you are always looking through where you're going. You're never looking down, because when you look down, that's where you're going to fall. You're always looking at where you're going or where you're going to be. And it teaches you how to not fight with the front end of the bike. When you fight with the front end of your bike, your front bike gets in trouble, you're going to go down. It's just, you're going to react to it. You're going to get stiff. The minute you get stiff, you lose control of the bike, and you're going to slide out and go down. So you learn how to correct in really tricky situations on a very quick decision. So I'm going to take this as a scenario. I'm coming around a corner, and we have had a lot of rain. And after that rain, there's been a lot of gravel. Let's say it's washed out of someone's driveway, which is quite common around here. And now you've got a big pile of gravel in front of you. So I'm still going around the corner, but I've got enough room to upright my bike from the turn that I'm in, ride straight through the gravel, and then drop it back down again and finish my turn. And now I'm safe and everything's fine and I didn't get hurt. No one got hurt behind me because I was able to call it out and people would see, possibly, hopefully, see what I had done and learn from that. Oftentimes I've gone through something like that, made it through, and then I hear somebody slide out behind me because they did not have the skills. Backing up to ride a cross bike. Learn the skills. Learn how to really ride your bike. It makes a big difference in all situations. The other thing that cross does for you is it allows you to really focus more on your power. And power is, right now, I went out a couple of weeks ago with my friend Mike. Shout out to Mike Sear, who's an awesome cyclocross race course designer. He's very, very good at what he does. And I'm out riding with him, and we got done after riding, and he looked at me and said, Ron, you need to work on your skills. And I said, it's not my skills that are hurting, it's my power. I said, I have no power right now. And I said, I have the skills, I just don't have the power to put myself into the skill situation. And that's what I need to work on. And that's so oftentimes I will sneak out for a very short ride and I'll just go and work on my power, because you have to put a lot of power into getting through soft, deep sand and up short, steep hills when you're off-road. Your gearing is not as low on a cross bike as it is on a mountain bicycle. So you really have to focus a lot more on getting your power back. So you're getting power, you're getting bike handling skills, and quite honestly, you're having a whole bunch of fun, because it's kind of like being a kid again when you get out there and you're riding around off-road. It's really, really fun. So you want to use this as a tool to improve your cycling skills. And Fran has heard me say this 10 times or more, or probably 100 times or more, but I am far more impressed with a rider that has good skills than I am with one who can ride fast. I just don't care how fast you can ride. That doesn't do anything for me. But if you can ride well, if you can actually handle your bicycle when you get in a tough situation, if you could ride alongside of me and not freak out and get all wiggly, and you can also ride with a consistent amount of power on those pedals and not surge and brake and surge and brake, I have a lot more respect for you than I would for someone who is inconsistent. So the consistency of the rider that has learned how to do that is far more impressive to me than it is the rider who can show me just how fast I can go up a hill. And I don't care. I really don't care. So, you know, that's me. I'm a bit of a curmudgeon. I will be the first to admit it. And all my friends will agree with me on that statement. But there's a reason. There's a reason. And that is that I want to go out and ride with my friends, and I want to be safe. And I can't be safe if my friends don't have the skills. So skills you can get on the cross bike. This cross bike is just a tremendous, tremendous tool. And it really does great stuff for you. So I'm telling you, you know, if you can figure out a way to get one, there's also lots of used ones out there. Get yourself a cross bike this fall. Let's go out and play. Let's have some fun with it. And you know, if you really get crazy with it, there's races for you, and you can do that too. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a few more minutes, because we have a bunch of races here in Connecticut, being that New England is a hotbed for cross. But, you know, get yourself that bike. Learn how to ride the bike. If you can find someone like myself or somebody else who has raced cross or has been on a cross bike for a long time, and they're willing to take the time to show you exactly how to do some of these things, how to mount and dismount, how to, carry the bike if you need to carry the bike in a situation. If you can find somebody like that, that's a treasure. You should take everything you can from that person and let them teach you. They love to teach you this sort of thing. Because if they can teach you to be a better rider, then they're more likely to want to ride with you. And that's a good thing. That's a really, really good thing. This will make you better. This will make you safer. And this will make you not only safer to the others that you're riding with, but it will make you safer to yourself. So remember, cross bikes. Good idea. Great idea. I had no idea about it when I first started doing this. My friends dragged me into this thing, and, you know, I figured it was just another way that they were just going to beat me up. They were all a bunch of Category 2 riders. I was a lowly 4 at the time. And, you know, I figured, oh, my God, I'm going to get my butt kicked here. And, you know, because it's really hard. You know, you're really, like, going as hard as you can. But you're going as hard as you can in tricky situations, so which also magnifies the problem of how hard it is. So I would go out and I would ride with these guys, and then we would go off to the races on the weekends, which there were very, very few back when I was first racing my bike. But there were a handful of them, and there were a handful of crazy guys that loved to race cross. And so I would go to these races, and of course I remember the first race I showed up to. I looked around and I went, well, he's a Cat 2. Boy, I think he's a Cat 1. He's definitely a Cat 2. I know him. He's definitely one of the... These were all like... It was the who's who of New England showing up to go out and do this, along with my friends who dragged me into it, who were both Category 2 riders. So I'm looking around and I'm thinking, well, you know, I'll just hang with them as long as I can, and then, you know, we'll go home and I'll lick my wounds and that will be that. Well, surprise to me, I could outride a number of them off-road. And the reason was because I grew up on a farm riding a bicycle in the woods. And when I would go out and train, I would train to my own. You kind of found time to get out and ride your bike. I was working. And so I would ride early in the morning before I go to work. I'd go out and do an hour on a power line and then take a shower and ride into work. And I just kind of practiced, and I fell down a lot. I had a lot of scars, you know, because I would fall and I'd hit my foot or I'd hit my ankle on the pedal and I'd draw some blood there. So I left a lot of DNA out there. But, you know, I learned, and then you learned how to ride through things that were yesterday difficult and today easy. And when you did, you got that really cool rush that you'd get. You'd almost get like a, you know, an adrenaline rush where your body would kind of shake and you go, yeah, I did it. And then you'd learn from that and you'd get better and better at it. And so I go off to the races and I'm starting to kick butt on the people that I thought were going to kick my butt. And it was an enlightening experience. It was very cool. It was also totally cool that they were all coming up to me and looking at me and going, who are you? Where did you come from? And that's how I got introduced to cyclocross. So obviously I was immediately hooked. And I will say that, yes, I am old enough to say this. My very first cross race was in the fall of 1976. So it was a very, very long time ago. But from that, I really learned a lot, and I became totally hooked on cross, and I have become totally hooked on getting people into it. And now I am a race director of a couple of different races here in New England, and I can't say enough good about it. I love getting kids into it, and we have such an incredible scene here in Connecticut with kids, because we've got the Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program, which is basically designed by Aiden Charles out in Middletown, Connecticut. He's a former pro bike racer, and he has put this whole thing together because he wanted to see more development of kids getting into cycling, because he didn't have that, and I didn't have that, and he is much younger than I am, but he put this whole thing together, and he did a great job, because now we've got tons of kids on bikes. And tons of kids, yeah, okay, we're a little tiny state. We're Connecticut. We're not very big. But we've got over 500 kids registered in this program. And they're racing mountain bikes, they're racing road bikes, and they're racing cyclocross bikes. My favorite race to bring them into is a cyclocross race. Why is it my favorite? Because it's short. Because when you take a kid and they're young, we have a 9 to 12 range on the two races that I'm involved with, and the race is 30 minutes long. That's it. Just 30 minutes. That's all. And so they don't feel like they're going to be left behind rarely. And, well, actually, if it's any of my races, they will not get pulled from the race. They won't get lapped and pulled. I tell my referees ahead of time, I don't want anyone pulled in any of my races. I want everybody to stay in. If they want to pull out of the race, it's their choice, not the referee's choice. And our races aren't big enough to cause a problem with lapped riders. So the kids hardly ever get lapped, and because their races are either 30 minutes or 40 minutes in length. Even when we go up to the next age group, it's just a 40-minute race, and that's it. So we're looking at developing young riders. We're teaching them how to ride in difficult situations. We're giving them skills. We're building their power. And then we're putting them on the road to become road racers. And boy, I'll tell you, talk about baiting the hook. Once you get them hooked on cross, they want to ride on the road because now they need a little more endurance because, you know, they got hooked on the whole cross idea. And you just, it begins right there. It begins there, and it begins with getting a good, strong state program going, like Aiden has put together with CCAP also. I believe that they won an award from USA Cycling for the program that we have in this little tiny state of Connecticut. And it's a program that other states are now looking at as, you know, this is the way they did it. Maybe we should be doing this too. I want kids back on bikes. I want kids away from their iPads. I want kids away from their computers, their video games. I want to get kids back outside, get them exercising and having a good time with it. I don't want them doing a virtual ride on a laptop computer. That just seems senseless to me. You're not contributing to their fitness. You're not contributing to their well-being with that. You're just contributing to their thumb skills. And that's just not great. So let's get those kids back on bikes again. Let's get them to do cross. Cross is good. I love cross. That's why I just think that we should all be paying a lot more attention to it. So anyway, speaking of which, we have a few things that I can add on to this, and that is, zipping down here to the bottom of my screen, we have cross races coming up, upcoming events. If you are here in Connecticut or in the New England region and you are looking for ways to get involved in cross and you want to give it a try, on Wednesday evenings, those buddies of mine over there at CCAP have a Rocky Hill Cyclocross series Wednesday evenings from September 6th through September 27th. And these are great places to learn how to play, to learn how to play the game, to learn how to do the sport. It is a cyclocross race, but there is also skill. There are skills clinics that go along with this. A lot of our CCAP riders, our younger riders, go to this to help develop their skills because the following weekend after September 6th is the beginning of what we will call Connecticut cyclocross season because the Connecticut series has an opener in Hartford on September 6th, Saturday, September 9th. And that would be Hartford Riverfront Cyclocross. And Hartford Riverfront Cyclocross is at Riverfront Park in Hartford, which is the home of the 2017 National Championship Cross Race. And I am the race director on that. I have a partner with me. Dave Arnold from Newington Bicycle Shop is also involved with me. We have a very generous sponsor, which helps us out with this. They'll be showing pretty cars if you go out to it. I won't go any further than that. But anyway, Saturday, September 9th, that's when you want to do this. If you want to learn any more about this, if you want to sign up for it, if you want to get involved with it, you can do it on bikereg.com, right? Bike Reg is bikereg.com. Anyway, you can go to Bike Reg and you can learn more. You can sign up there. There are multiple races that are going to be happening in Connecticut. I believe the series is 7 or 8 races long. There's different races in different places. The second in the series of the Connecticut series is at Mansfield Hollow State Park in Mansfield, Connecticut, which is just down the road from where we are sitting right now broadcasting. And that is also, I am the race director on that one. That will be Saturday, October 7th. Before that, though, if you want to see cross racing at its highest level, the KMC CrossFest is September 28th through October 1st. It's a 3-day event. There's all sorts of cool stuff going on there. There is the Friday night of the first day of that race. There is an event called the Builder's Ball. And the Builder's Ball is really cool. It is a hand-built show where custom frame builders are coming in and showing you their wares and their steel bicycles and their really cool stuff that they're doing. And they will be there. And next week, we will have Eric Weiss from the Builder's Ball, who has been putting it on now for, this will be his 11th year. We will have him on the air with us so we can learn more about the Builder's Ball. And that is KMC CrossFest is September 28th through October 1st. And that is also in Connecticut. That is in Thompson, Connecticut at the Thompson Speedway. Following the Mansfield Hollow one on October 7th, we have the Gloucester Grand Prix of Cross October 14th and 15th. It is one of the largest cyclocross races in the United States. And again, another great event. There are numerous other races that are advertised on Bike Reg, and you can go there and you can learn more about it. It's just, it's an exciting time of year. Yeah, the leaves are starting to turn, the weather's starting to turn, but the cross bikes are starting to come out. So this is a really cool thing. That's it. I'm going to sign off now. My name is Pedlin Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. You can send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral 1 at gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you'd like to contribute or be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk@gmail.com. This is Pedlin Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.